Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed, which is the perfect excuse for the reason why I've not done any real episode. Well, I guess the last episode that I did was probably maybe about a month ago, but that was a non-review episode. Although I've released other things in the feed, I guess the last proper review, I guess, of Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 was maybe 6 or 7 weeks ago. And there's probably quite a lot of excuses for that and a lot of news that's happened in that time, but I don't really want to go over too much of it because it's always the same kind of thing. Yeah, I've been writing and I've been reading other books, non-science fiction books and stuff like that. Mainly, the thing is like I mentioned, I think in the last episode, is that I'm newly single, or I got dumped in at the beginning of August, or sometime near the beginning of August, and so my life has changed around a little bit. I've been doing some stuff. Some things have been put on hold, and other things have been accelerated and things like that. So I sort of dropped reading for quite a bit throughout September. But I know I'll do a lot more soon, because between now and January, I've only got about 17 days at home. Because back when I had a girlfriend, I only wanted to work, do my travelling work, maybe a week every month and the rest of the time. But now I'm thinking of just working through to the end of December into the beginning of January as much as possible, saving up some money and then taking 3 months off in the new year. So that's what I'm going to be doing, which means, like I said, 17 days at home between now and January, which means loads of work and loads of travelling, which means a lot of reading, which means a whole lot of podcasting to come by the end of the year, which is really cool. Other excuses is that I've been writing the follow-up novel to my first released novel called Minding Tomorrow, and I don't have a good title for the next novel. I split it into two sections, and I'm around about three quarters of the way through one of the sections. And I'm thinking what I'm going to do is write the next section and see if I can get it done before like the end of October, and then start another novel in November for the NaNoWriMo, which I probably won't finish, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway for the National Novel Writing Month. And of course, I read Steel Remains and did a review or a podcast, kind of joint podcast with the SFF audio thing with those guys. And also, I've been playing quite a lot of computer games because it's a great way for me to turn my mind off in some ways. So, that's news and stuff. Not very interesting. I'm currently on a cruise ship on the way to Africa, to a little bit of Spain, which is stuck on the top of Morocco called... what's it called? I have it on a bit of paper here. Sueta, not really entirely sure. Casablanca the day after that. Anyway, I'm going to really enjoy this trip out. Feedback. I got a few bits of email. Not that much, because like I say, I've not done a proper episode in a long time. But I do get lots of feedback of people listening to old episodes, like past episodes from maybe a year ago or something like that, which is really great. But of course, lots of people say, hey, you mentioned this in your podcast, and I think you're mistaken about that, and I think this. And I'm like, did I say that? And of course, I can't remember, because it was over a year ago, and I don't listen back to all of my podcasts at regular intervals and stuff like that. But either way, keep sending in the feedback. You people listening in the future, now, if you're listening to this next... Yeah, tell you what, if you're listening to this podcast more than more than 3 months after it was first released, send me an email and say, hey, I'm listening to episode number 66 about John Varley's Steel Beach, and tell me why you're reading it now. Have you gone through and listened to every episode in order up until this point? Because if you have, well done. You've done about, 70 podcasts or something are in the feed at the moment. So good for sticking with it. So anyway, yes, keep sending in the feedback. I will be sharing, of course, more feedback. I'll concentrate a bit more on the feedback at the beginning of the next episode that I do, which probably won't be too long. This book that I've been reading recently, or have been reading over the past few weeks, another reason, I started a book called Eiffelheim, but I can't remember who wrote it, Eiffelheim, but I got about 100 pages in, and the story hadn't really started yet, and it was dragging a bit, so I thought I'd put it down and try Steel Beach by John Varley. And it was written, published in 1993, and it comes in at around about 560, 570 pages long, which for a paperback book is a chunky book. I think one of the previous episodes I did was a video streaming thing, and when I showed people the books that I had to read, someone said, wow, that's a lot of chunky paperback books. And yes, this is a very chunky paperback book. I'll start off talking about the world of the book. It's there's an author's note at the end, and it says something, this story appears to be part of a future history of mine, often called the Eight Worlds. So this is like a revisiting of into like a pre-existing universe by John Varley. Not entirely the same universe, he says that I've sort of cheated a bit and the timeline doesn't exactly fit, but it's near enough to that, which isn't a universe that I've read any other fiction from. So the quick setup is this. Sometime in the 21st century, late 21st century, Earth is invaded by the mysterious invaders, and the entire world is sort of like taken over, and the humans are all exterminated or kicked off within about 3 days. And they're not quite sure why this happened, but they reckon it's this: the aliens saw how we were mistreating dolphins and whales and thought, oi, stop that, and just like did a like an extermination job on the human race. So the humans aren't allowed on the world onto Earth again, but they managed to colonize, I guess, it's not really mentioned too clearly in the book Steel Beach, but probably eight worlds. So you've got the moon, you've got Mars, you've got Mercury, Venus. They're not allowed to be at Jupiter, but they can have Saturn, so there's probably quite a few Saturn's moons. Pluto's mentioned, I think, as well. So yeah, that's good. So you've got colonized these other things. And this book is set entirely on the moon. And the people on the moon live really well, because what they've done is that they carve out underground passageways and underground cities, and they have these things called Disneylands, which are big, big open spaces, like 50 kilometers across inside the moon, blown out with sort of use like nuclear bombs to carve out places to live underneath the ground and stuff like that. And people live really, really well. Everything's taken care of. Nobody goes hungry. If you want a job, you can have a job, but you don't need to work. You could get given food. But people, you know, there's lots of artists and lots of journalists and all that kind of stuff. And like I said before, there's these big lots of people just live in sort of apartments in these like Warren kind of things, like these corridor based underground cities. But they have these things called Disneylands, which are these big open spaces inside, where some of them are period Disneylands, which means that, for example, a lot of the action takes place in a place called Texas or West Texas, and everyone in West Texas has to stick to like technology level and clothing level that was in West Texas at the end, like between mid-end of the 19th century, that kind of thing. And there's another one which is Pennsylvania at the same time, and others are mentioned throughout the book as well. Oregon is is like mainly like a wildlife reserve. They don't do anything in there at all. There's no humans allowed in there. Running everything is the CC, or the Central Computer, which is this massive supercomputer who started out as just like a computer that helped regulate air supply and water and things like that, but it evolved and got given more and more responsibility until it gets to the point in the beginning of the book where you realize that the CC, the Central Computer, pretty much runs everything and keeps everyone happy and looks after everyone and things like that. So there's not a lot of responsibility needed by anyone there. So people can just live a life of luxury, and that's what they do. And there's lots of religions that seem to flourish, and there's this one main like cult of celebrity that has sort of like four main sort of saints which have been beatified, I think. Is that the word to be when you become a saint? I don't know. Or canonized. I don't know which one it is. Anyway, so yes, it'll be canonized. So they've been, like, Elvis is one of the saints, and some other, like, future artists are some saints as well, and things like that. So that's interesting. There's lots of, like I said before, there's these news pads, these lots of journalism, not a lot of politics going on because the central computer runs all of that thing, that kind of thing. But people are very free and open, you know. They can do whatever they want. They can modify themselves in different ways. Sex is accepted and very free. And actually, that brings me to one of the coolest opening lines, one of the most interesting opening lines of any book that I've ever read. I'll just read it straight out to you. Here it goes. In 5 years, the penis will be obsolete, said the salesman. And it's just there. In 5 years, the penis will be obsolete. And that's a kind of real good setup where you actually realize the level of technology and the openness of people's sexuality and things like that. It really does like open up the world. And it is actually a really great opening line. As soon as I read that, I was like, wow, this book's going to be great. And in a lot of ways, it was. Of course, I'll get onto that later. Of course, sex, people can, like I said, you know, the penis will be obsolete, so people can modify themselves sexually, they can have sex changes, and it's possible to get a sex change in a single day. So you can go out and you come back and your lover is now like, oh, you were female last time I saw you, and now you're a male. That kind of thing happens a few times in the book. Also, it happens to the main character. The main character called Hildy actually changes sex. So I don't want to give away what happens to Hildy when she is a he, or when he is a she, or which way around it is. So I'm just going to refer to Hildy as Yo, because that is it's not any kind of standard gender non-specific personal pronoun, but it's one that Pola and I would use for other people. Like, Yo did this. If someone was driving a car, and we wouldn't say, oh, he's driving or she's driving, we'd say Yo is driving, or that's Yo's car, and things like that. So I'll use that. Because it comes naturally to me now. It's like a bit of... I read it in an article once online. I thought, Yo works really well as a gender non-specific personal pronoun. Which actually, that issue is brought up in the in one of the last pages of the book. Because Hildy is a journalist. And I think one of the last pages, it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to try and work for pronoun reform. And I'm like, well, you know, this option is already there. Yeah, just search for Yo personal pronoun on Google. I'm sure you'll find the article that I found about that. Anyway, so this world, I've talked a bit about it, and there's lots of things, and I haven't gone into a lot of the specifics about this, because this is the good thing. One of the best things about this book is that the world is very well realized, and it's really good fun to read. It's very immersive. Like mentioned, I don't think I put that episode in the podcast feed, but I was on the SFF Audio discussing The Steel Remains by Richard Morgan. After that, we recorded more podcasts talking about different audiobooks and just discussing general science fiction releases and books and stuff like that. And I can't remember who said it, but it was bashed out between a few people, and they said, I can't remember who the guest was who mentioned it. And he said, the difference between fantasy and science fiction is like, science fiction there's like a goldfish in a bowl, and you grab the goldfish and jerk it out the bowl, and then they're sort of like shocked by the new environment. That is what science fiction is like. And that's really what you get here very well in this book. By literally, you just come straight into it. It's like, in 5 years' time, the penis will be obsolete. And it's like, wow, that's shocking. But also, he said the opposite of that is fantasy. It's where you're being immersed into like a new environment. So you're not being shocked into it. You're sort of being gently sort of soothed. You're placed in warm water, and then you swim around and go, oh, what's over here? Oh, what's over here? Oh, what's over here? And it's a much more comfortable sort of like exploration, immersive kind of experience reading fantasy. And you do get both of that in this book. Some of the things are there to shock, but a lot of it is there to be sort of you being immersed in the world. And it is a very immersive world, a bit like New Crobuzon in Perdido Street Station by China Mieville. It's like a vivid world, really, really vivid, but in the same way, a vivid world does not a great novel make. It helps a lot, and it's very enjoyable to spend time in this world. But it doesn't always, too much world building doesn't always make for the best novels. So let's bring on to the story. Hildy is a journalist, and Yo does journalistic kind of things. And in some way, to get like to a good view of Hildy's life and the world, the wider world in general, Yo was put in charge of Brenda, a young assistant / rookie reporter. And then what happens is the plot goes meander, 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 sort of go and look over here, and then go and look over there, and go and look over there. Meanwhile, sometimes in this meandering, Hildy tries to commit suicide, but then the narrative like skips a little bit, and then things just carry on as though nothing has happened. And it's sort of like, the next day I went and did this, and you're like, wait a second, Hildy just tried to commit suicide, what's going on here? And then we find out about 100 pages in that the CC, the central computer, has been watching over Hildy and saving Hildy's life, and then erasing the memory of the suicide attempt. And also we find out that the CC, the central computer, has been doing this more and more to other people, and is realizing that there's been like this spate of this like increase in suicide attempts on the moon, or in the moon cities where people are living. So pretty much the rest of the book is Hildy trying to work out why Yo felt suicide was the best thing, and how to change Yo's lifestyle and become happier and less suicidal. And Yo does the various things, you know, including, as I said before, changing sex, hooking up with some old lovers, you know, finding new lovers and getting a pet and quitting Yo's job and, you know, sharing the story with Yo's mother, etc., etc., etc. So that is it, pretty much. I know I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but I can't, because that is the plot, and it's really, really thin. And as I said, there's lots of world building, so every time the plot sort of moves forward even a slightly, even when there is a little bit of slight moving forward or anything happens at all, then you get this long, slow, like, oh, and now let's go and visit these people and see what these is, and this is what these people do, and then there's... And then it always takes ages for anything to happen. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, probably time and time again, stuff happening does not equal plot. Just because things happen doesn't mean that the characters are moving forward, or the plot is moving forward, or the story is moving forward, and that's what you get all the time. There's loads of things that don't move the story forwards, and I mean, they're actually really nice kind of thematic and world building kind of explorations, but you get this whole point. It's like Hildy's boss Walter suddenly goes, oh, and there's this big story and we've not talked about it at all before now, but there's this celebrity cult who is going to canonize a new personality, go and cover the story. And Hildy's like, okay, so what we do then is we get like 10 pages worth of filling in about what the celebrity cult is, and then we get another 2 or 3 pages of Hildy going to the event, and then we get another few pages of what happens at the event, then we get another 10, 20 pages of the things that happen after the event to follow up the story of the things that did happen at the event. And also, what did happen at the event is a little bit predictable, which is a bit strange. And then by the end of that, you just go, okay, so what actually happened then? And how has the plot moved forward? And you realize, no, that's 50 pages and nothing's happened. Well, stuff has happened, but you realize that, and it is a little, it's a nice little sort of satire bit, and there's a nice little thematic kind of exploration then, but it doesn't actually move the plot forward. And then you've got to wait another 5 or 6 pages before it gets back to something that might be plot, but then it meanders off over here and you find out about these people and you meet these political faction and you're this religion and you're like, okay, I get it, there's a lot of stuff happening here. Yeah, and that just happens over and over and over again, so it's really hard to pick the point where the plot actually begins. And I guess it's probably about the first 100 pages is pure setup. And then, like, there's early suicide attempts. There's a suicide attempt, but then it skips over again, and then it goes on a bit further, and then there's another suicide attempt, and it skips a bit. I guess it really starts after 100 pages here's the key thing, is that the CC, the central computer, admits that he is feeling a little bit depressed as well and is having some kind of maybe suicidal thoughts. And that's the time when you think, right, now this plot's going to kick into gear. We realize there's some, like, there's this real big, like, risk to society where the central computer that's running everything is getting depressed. He actually says, I'm getting, like, a hell of a depression myself. And then it skips, and then, like, that's the end of one chapter. I'm thinking, wow, okay, now it's going to start. Now it's going to pick up. Now it's going to get moving. But no, we get meander, meander, meander. And like I said, it's not just things get in the way of the plot, but then those things that are happening, they also take ages. But not just ages in the book, but actually ages in time as well. For example, at one point, one character gets pregnant. And so we have a section of the book which lasts a few pages, like maybe 20 pages or something, which takes 9 months. Or the actual, you know, the stuff that's happening takes around about 9 months. But then it skips over loads of stuff. But this actually happens in the last quarter, in the last quarter of the book. So most of the book happens, you know, it happens over a few days, and then another bit happens over a few weeks, and then another bit happens really quickly in a few days. It's like the first few quarters of the book, and then the last, like, quarter of the book happens over a period of 9 months. And this is like the time of the book where normally books would really start to get going, you know, they ramp up towards the end, and, you know, time actually, you know, the pacing of actually events that are happening come close together and it builds tension. But not here. It's sort of tension, 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 tension. What's going to happen over here with the CC? Oh, with this political kind of stuff. Oh, wait a second, let's just spend 9 months and this person's going to get pregnant and have a baby and stuff like that. So it's like that the pacing really suddenly drags towards the end of the book. But again, the plot isn't everything. Even though I found the plot very disappointing, it does take a backseat to the world building and to the concepts and the themes that are being taken place. The resolution is also a little bit disappointing, but I'm thinking, why can't we have both? Why can't we have, like, this fantastic world, this really good sort of thematic exploration? Because there is a lot of good stuff. I'll talk about that in a bit. But it's like, why can't we have both? Like, Peter F. Hamilton has these massively, you know, complex worlds, but is also talking, you know, and he's got a complex world and he's got the thematic, maybe not as strong emphasis on the thematic kind of exploration as a book like this, but there's real plot driving it forward. You know, everything in the book, well, not, maybe not every single little thing, but most things will drive something forward. Even if it's not the main plot, it'll be some character development or it'll be some subplot. Whereas in Steel Beach, which is like a chunky novel to rival any like single volume of Peter F. Hamilton's, there's not that kind of focus on actually getting on with stuff. And I think stuff could have been gotten on with in this book a lot better. You know, like, I mentioned it, I think, in the Alistair Reynolds book. I think it was called The Prefect. There's loads and loads of world building, and it's a new world, and it's really, you know, expertly woven into the story as well. And at the end, like, every single thing that's been explained in the world somehow ties back into the plot. This book is, like, the opposite of that. And also, there was the book I read recently, which is called The Sky So Big and Black by John Barnes. Again, this, like, and I was thinking, this is a similar kind of meandering thing. It takes a long time. You know, a lot of time is spent explaining this, a lot of time is spent there. They have these political kind of conversations, and they talk about the history of Earth, and it's not so much an alien invasion which kicked people off Earth. It's like a computer virus that spreads to people on Earth there as well. And it's had this sort of, like, meandering kind of focus, but when it all came together at the end, it's like everything tied in together, and it was like, that's really clever. Was this book, nothing at all. You got David Earth, like this main character, the main political character that comes up, no impact on the plot. There's dinosaurs are introduced and they're like, "Wee, dinosaurs," no impact on the plot. There's like this Church of Celebrity, no impact on the plot. There's like, even like the opening line of the book and this technology which penises are no longer useful and they're going to become obsolete. I'm thinking, wow, this is going to, at the end of the book, no impact on the plot at all. So I think this is mainly down to the writing style, you know, as well as the plot. Hildy is a journalist as well, and this is another small plot thing that was not related, but I just skipped over a note by accident there, is that Hildy, as a journalist, seems to be included. Like, there's lots of big stories that happen in the, say, let's say around about the 2 years time span that this book is set over, and Hildy is involved closely in every single one of the big stories. And pretty much every one of the big stories you could sort of see coming. But then when you couldn't see them coming, like when they weren't blatantly obvious, like the thing that's going to happen when the canonization of this this new saint, this new celebrity saint, it's like, okay, it's obvious what is going to happen here. Like, pages out, you're thinking, okay, yeah, I can see it coming. And then it does come. And then, like, the twist behind that and all of the setup behind it, it's like, well, that was obvious as well. You could sort of see that coming. Which is a real pity, even though it wasn't main plot, it was very much subplot. It was a pity that you could see it coming. But then when something is there which you don't see coming, or like an opportunity for something to see coming and it doesn't happen, what happens is then John Varley generally gives it away really early to make it a surprise. So when it's impossible to see something coming, he just skips forward in time, says, because it's sort of like it's written first person by Hildy, and Hildy is a journalist, so it's like, oh, you remember when this event happened? It's like, this is such a big event, everyone remember what happened during this event. And you're like, well, actually, great that you just told me that this is a massive event which is so big that everyone was involved and everyone remembers what was happening when it happened. It's like, great. And then it goes back and fills it in, that sort of, what's the literary term for this? I can't remember, the skipping forward and then back to fill in. Is it in medias res? I think in medias res. So that kind of thing happens so many times. So just when you think you're going to get this big sort of plot reveal kind of switchy up kind of thing where you can't see something happen, he skips forward so much that all tension is taken out of the situation. And then the details are filled in later, which is a real pity. Moving on to the characters, I talked a bit about Hildy. While the plot and the pacing are quite painfully slow, the character of Hildy is actually really quite interesting. Hildy isn't actually that likable at the beginning, but then, of course, Hildy does change a lot throughout the novel. For a start, the sex change. Yo has a male to female sex change at one part of the book. So the first part, Hildy is a quite well-written guy. Again, it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like almost a generic kind of, well, not even a generic kind of journalist kind of character, but, you know, sort of a driven journalist, but not really, a bit sick of his job, wants to move on and stuff like that kind of thing. But then the second half of the book, Yo is a girl, which, and again, it's not so much that she was a really convincing female character as a female character, because I'm not even sure if she was that convincing, but what really impressed me was the transition from male to female. When it first happens, you're like, oh, this feels a bit like a gimmick, and then it focuses really, like, quite a lot on the sex, because the hormonal imbalance means that the new female Hildy is really, like overly sexed. So a few pages are like, yeah, sex, 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 and, you know, women, talk about clothes more, talk about female figures more, talk about losing weight, and suddenly these, like, female issues come into it, which was a little bit jarring at first, but then, after maybe 20, 30 pages, 40 pages of that, suddenly, to me, Hildy was female, no longer male at all, and I couldn't even remember what Yo was like as a male and not as a female, because the view of the world suddenly becomes female, and it's like Yo had always been a female, but Yo hadn't, let me put it that way. So I'm not sure if other people would go with this in this book. Maybe if you're going to read this book, you may not be able to pick up on that, but it really caught me surprised how much I liked that transition in the middle of the book. I almost wanted Hildy to change back into a male again. Oh, actually, I shouldn't give it away. Maybe Hildy does. However, while I enjoyed the character and I sort of enjoyed the journey of Hildy and the sort of like the character pictures and thing. Like the picturing the character and what Hildy does in these different situations, I think is very well explored. We're with Hildy all the time. It's first person narrative and it never leaves Hildy. The only time it leaves Hildy is when Hildy goes off and suddenly rambles on about this thing or that thing, you know. So we do get to meet secondary characters, but we always see them from Hildy's point of view, which means that if Hildy meets up with someone and then Yo is just suddenly like, oh, and then that person dropped out of my life and then I moved on and I forgot them, they sort of drop out of the book as well. So there seem to be lots of stories where I'm thinking, wait a second, I was spending time with that guy, what happened to that guy? You know, I was interested in that person, but then if Hildy doesn't come across them again, that's it, they're out of the book, which is really disappointing. So entire like subplots and stories seem to just be dropped, like Hildy's mother. I'd really like to spend some more time with Hildy's mother. And, yeah, there's a few other characters which I'd like to have seen a bit more, like, fleshed out a bit more. And other characters, I don't really want to give away which of the characters do become more important and which of them I sort of picked up for a while and then dropped, because, you know, I just don't want to give it away. But sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good. I just wanted more from the secondary characters, I think. The science and technology, like science fiction elements in the book are great, and again I mentioned some of them in the world building. There's lots of little gadgets and gizmos and things and the way things work, and there's loads of really good stuff here. This book is crammed packed full of good ideas. Things I'm not going to go into too many of these, because this is like for me one of the main sources of enjoyment of a book, and it really sometimes pains me when I'm reviewing a book I actually really quite like this book. Even though there's bad points about the book and even though there's good points about it, the good points I want to leave you to discover for yourself, because these are really good. You know, all the different technologies, even, like I say, just the opening line of the book, the penis will become obsolete, and you're like, wow, this is interesting. How is this going to work? And it's that kind of thing. And all the way through the book, John Varley just throws up these ideas and is like, hey, how about this? How about dinosaurs? How about this kind of technology? How about that? What about this? All really good stuff, except John Varley commits a sin. After, let me just look at this, because it was quite a key thing. I turned a corner over here in the book. After 440 pages of a 560-something page book, in other words, like four-fifths of the way through the book, he changes the rules. He introduces like a whole raft of new technologies based on not just an unexplainable like force field technology, but it's not even explained. He literally just goes, using some gadgets and gizmos and thingy bobs and waddle me poops, and he literally is writing like jargon. It's like, oh, and Hildy doesn't understand it, so I won't explain it, and I won't even bother explaining it. I'm like, you can't just do that. You, seriously, this is really bad, and this happens with quite a lot of science fiction novels as well. It's like, you can't introduce 4/5 of the way through the book a new set of rules, a new set of science rules, a new set of technology rules, a new set of like game rules. It's like, it's like you've got to set your car. Sticking with the game analogy here, you've got to put the cards on the table and say, these are the cards, these are the rules I'm going to be playing with. Do you want to play with me? Great. Okay, I'm going to take you for a ride. We're going to play this game together. I'll be doing the thinking. John Valley's doing the thinking, doing the writing, and I'm going to be doing the imagineering and the going along with it. But if right at the end of the book, 4/5 of the way through the book, you suddenly go, oh, actually, we're playing this different game now. It feels really disappointing, and it makes me want to cry, because it's like, if you're good, I mean, it's not like saying if you're a good novelist or a bad novelist. It's like, because sometimes other things are good enough that you don't really mind, like a great Deus Ex Machina. Well, I say you don't mind it. Say Peter F. Hamilton, he often just goes, da 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 la 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 la, oh, it's only big technology, look at this, it's bigger than we ever imagined, and bing, bash, bong, world set to rights, everyone lives happily ever after, and you're like, oh, it wasn't very satisfying. But the rest of the book, you've taken on a journey, and there's other plot there, there's political intrigue, everything else going on. Except with this book, because there's like a lack of other plot going on, when you suddenly go, oh, actually, check it out, this is what's gonna go down, you're suddenly like, oh man, I was really enjoying it. Couldn't you have used the rules that are set in place at the beginning? I mean, there's so many good ideas, so many great directions you could have taken the plot, or what there was of the plot towards the end of the book, to have some real crisis at the end of the book. And he does do that, but the way the crisis is resolved and Hildy gets out of the situation is just like, oh, you could have done better. So which is a real pity. There was one other thing that I was going to mention about science and technology, but it slipped my mind. I didn't make a note of it, but I just thought of it when I was talking there a little bit. I'll edit this bit. No, I'm not going to edit this bit. No, I can't remember what it was. I'll move on to next on my list of notes. Writing style. I didn't actually make that many notes about this. Let me think. Oh, yeah. Question. Written in first person, past tense, you know, it's like, I did this, I did that, I did this. First of all, I wasn't quite sure how far, when the book, let me put it this way, I wasn't quite sure if it was like written in past tense, but then we're people who don't know what's happened in the future. But as the book went on, more and more often, it's like, I wasn't quite sure who the fictional target audience was. Maybe I'm not explaining that right there. Okay. At the end of the book, as we go through the book, we're told, hey, do you remember when this happened? Where were you when this happened? I'm thinking, okay, this book is written to people who know the main events of this book. And yet, it isn't that. So it's very inconsistent. It's like, so much we're given lectures about what's happened to the Earth. It's like, yeah, but if I lived in this world and I knew this kind of thing, and if I meant to remember where I was when this thing happened, I would know the history of the world, and I'd know the history of this, and I'd know what a Disneyland was, and I'd know what this character is, and I'd know who David Earth was, and I'd know that dinosaurs are red and stuff like that, and all these different kind of things. But then at the end of the book, it seemed to be used in a bit of ways that were sort of like, oh, everyone remembers when this big event happens. Like, no, I don't. I wasn't there. So then it sort of skips over massive details of how things were sorted and all these questions that would come into your head, and it's just like, oh, yeah, but you already know that, don't you? And it's like, No, I don't know what went on there. So that was a bit strange. And also, it seems a bit strange that you'd think if I had lived through all of these events, I would know about them before they were then explained to me. So it's not just who I am and if I was meant to have read through these events, but also it's like when in these events I'm being told this story. Of course, you find out at the end I'm being told these events after everything, but the massive world-changing events that happen in the last part of the book aren't mentioned at all in the first part. And then the big events that are talked about there, like the death of this person, or it's like, oh, when were you when you saw this or heard about this, it's like, if those events happen that close to the other events that happened at the end of the book, nobody would remember them. It's like, where were you when... It's this kind of thing. It's like, where were you on the day before, on the news story that happened the day before September the 11th, 2001? It's like, nobody remembers that. There was a much bigger news story that happened directly after that. So you know, why remember the tiny news story that happened, you know, the month before when the world-changing event happened a month later? You know, it's that kind of weird thing. So it's like, it's a very strange thing. Another weird thing is, like, what is this meant to be? Is it meant to be a novel? Literally at one point, at the end of the book, like I say, the book sort of falls apart a tiny bit towards the end of the book. Hilde introduces a character, but the character isn't fictional. Let me put it this way. The character is a real person, but Hilde is writing about that person in a way to conceal that person's identity. So he says, I'm going to call him this character, but that wasn't his real name. And he looked like this, but he didn't really look like this. So you get this passage where Hilde says, imagine you're reading a novel. And when you're reading a novel, someone's face isn't described. So I'm not going to describe this person's face, but just fill it in. Just imagine a pop star and give that person a pop star's face and do it like that. I'm saying, but this is a novel. You can't. It was just this really weird sort of like kind of self-referential kind of postmodern kind of thing to say. Imagine you're reading a novel when you are reading a novel, and that kind of thing happened a few times in the book, which was really nice in some ways, but a little bit confusing. It sort of took me out. It sort of like my suspension of disbelief was suspended for a second there, which is a bit strange. But overall, the writing style is actually really easygoing. There's plenty of humour, lots of wordplay, like I say, but it was a little bit inconsistent. But overall, it's actually a really good read, even if it wasn't for the lackluster plot and the pacing going a bit bad. Like, if this is cut down to 350 words, or maybe 350 pages, or 300 pages, it would be like a really, really fun read because of the level of the writing and the lightness of the light. And it's really strange because this book is pretty much about suicide and cynicism and darkness. And yet for that, it's actually a really good, fun read. Also, there is a lot of, in the writing style and sort of like the world and everything like that, there's quite a few nods to Heinlein books. You got the free sex and the moon's setting. Actually, at one point, I noticed a great reference to one of my all-time favorite novels, which is this juvenile novel called Have Spacesuit, Will Travel. One day I'll get round to reviewing this for the podcast. And in that, there's a whole start of the book is these people go on a journey in a spacesuit across the moon, and there's this whole thing about incompatible air hoses, and there's this great bit right near the end of the book where Hilde goes on this adventure, and she finds that there's these incompatible air hoses, and I really like those nods, and there's so many of those nods to Heinlein all the way throughout the book. You can see this is almost like Heinlein fan fiction, but not quite. But it's set on the moon, like so many Heinlein kind of books are, with the same kind of themes. Well, not the same kind of themes, the same kind of attitudes and politics and stuff like that. Unfortunately, a lot of those sort of nods to Heinlein don't actually add to the story very much, but there are loads in the book. Other themes, again, loads of themes in the book as well. I made note of some of them here as well, just off the top of my head as I was writing up some of these notes. You got celebrity culture, comments on that, some good satire about that, quite a bit about family units and family, the way it works with family, because if you think about it, if you can change your sex, you can change to a woman, have a baby, and then change back to being a man, or it doesn't really matter. So you can be of both a father figure and a mother figure to your child at the same time, well, not at the same time, but over the course of life. And I really like that. Ian M. Banks does not a similar thing, but with the whole sex change kind of thing in his culture novels. I can't remember which book it's talked about in, but two people get together, and male and female, and the male impregnate the female. And then what will happen is that they'll sort of go, okay, you're pregnant, but we're just going to keep that baby on hold, so don't develop it, just think about it and don't develop it. They both have a sex change, then they impregnate each other the other way around again. So then they're both pregnant, and then they, you know, both go back to being females, and they're both going into to be females, and then they give birth at the same time, and then one of them turns back into male again, and so then they grow up with a family unit of not quite twins, but, you know, brother and sister or brother and brother or whatever it's going to be at the same time. So that kind of thing is nice, and it's touched on quite a bit in this book, which is good. There's quite a bit about journalism and commerce and teaching as well. There's a whole sort of like subplot about teaching. Well, not so much subplot, a sub-essay, let me put it that way, a subsection of the book. And then there's, you know, ethics and religion and sort of like the nature of God's relationship to man and man's relationship to God with the central computer. You know, there's lots of stuff going on there, etc., etc., and loads more beside. Thing is, Varley has a lot of space to write essays, and that's pretty much what it comes down to. Not so much essays, but sort of case studies for all of these different themes. It's like, okay, in this world, let me now discuss this theme. And he'll do that for like 5 or 6 pages and then move on to something. And that's, I actually really enjoyed that part of the book, how he can go into so many different little essays and little experiments and different thought experiments, and I like that. But some of the main ones are this. First of all, of course, the sex issues, which is a bit weird. For some, like, sex is like almost mundane. It's not mundane, it's just accepted in a really easy way, yet Varley spends a lot of time on it in this book, and I don't mind that. It did slow the story down a bit, and sometimes it focused a little bit too much on the sex, and when for everyone involved in the book that is just a generally accepted kind of practice, that people will just get together and have sex, but then it's dwelled on so much in a way that Hildy or the narrator is writing it as though we're from the 20th or 21st century rather than the 24th century or whatever this book is set. So again, it's the inconsistency between the stated audience or readership of the book and actually me reading it there. You know, there's so that's set a bit too much in the foreground for who it should have been written for. There's quite a lot of bit about political views. Very little politics in the book, because like I said before, the central computer runs everything. So, like I say, the politics isn't in the book. The politics is mainly in John Varley's view of what's happening. There's even a whole faction called the Heinleiners, and this sect is mentioned very early on in the book in a sort of like, hey, reader, check out this group. They're called the Heinleiners, but I'm not going to talk about them now. No. Everything else I've done, as soon as I mention a political group, I go into it and explain it all straight away. And if I mention any technology, I explain it all. And if I mention any place or other group of people, I explain it all straight away. But these are the Heinleiners, but I'm not going to explain them now. Do you think these guys are going to be important later? Yeah, I think they are. And it's a little bit too obvious there. But of course, at the end of the book, you do get them, and of course the Heinleiners are quite important, and as you say, this is like a book almost dedicated. It even says on the back here, I've mentioned this quote at the back, one of the few novels that deserves to be compared to the works of Robert Heinlein, full of shocks and surprises, packed with humour and wit, sheer entertainment. And that it is, actually. This is one of the few times, and I actually agree with this quote, one of the few times the novel deserves to be compared with Robert A. Heinlein. It does have a lot of Heinlein, but if it was about, like, say, half the length, it would have been the length of a Heinlein book, and it would have been a lot better. Anyway, so yeah, there is that kind of thing, and you get the Heinleiners, who are like these hardcore libertarian kind of, hey, everyone free and sex with each other, yeah, no problem. Well, actually, everyone's like that, but it's much more of the sort of like libertarian kind of views on that kind of stuff. And then you do get exploration of the other side, but those people are dismissed. You meet David Earth and the Earthists, who are wearing the Earth on their bodies. Really, great idea. I really enjoyed these people, and they sort of communicate with nature, and they never wash and things like that. But then in the end, they just become like comic relief in a way. And just dismissed as irrelevant. And they are irrelevant, but in the same way that the Heinleiners are irrelevant, except because, like you said before, this sort of deus ex machina of their use at the end as well. Big theme of the book is, of course, like I said before, the cynicism of life, and everything's a bit pointless. And the worst thing is that a lot of the events in the book are pointless, and it's sort of like Hildy is going, what is the meaning of life? Is it this? And no, that turns out to be pointless. And is it that? No, that turns out to be pointless. So we get a whole load of pointlessness in the book, which, again, I've never really experienced this in a book, and it's quite interesting, except that when there's like a lot of cynicism, and I'm feeling what the central character is feeling, like the main protagonist is feeling, but the main character is feeling, that life is pointless, and, you know, when the main emotions are sometimes boredom and depression and cynicism, it means that I'm also then feeling those things, and it means I'm not enjoying the book very much. So I did feel that, but in some ways I'm thinking, this is either really great writing or really bad writing. I wasn't quite sure which way around it went. The main theme, though, is, I've mentioned it before, is a suicide theme. The thing is, it gets in the way a bit. For, like, literally, at one point it goes, Hildy went to the library to research suicide. And I'm like, oh, great. I mean, come on. And then it's like, okay, we get 4 pages of the story of Hildy going to the library and researching suicide. But then we get then another long description, like literally an essay. It's like, and this is what I found. This is Hildy talking. This is what I found. There's 5 ways, maybe 6 ways that people commit suicide. Not ways, but reasons why people commit suicide. Here's the way number one. Here's way number two. Here's way number three. And I'm just like, oh, for goodness sake. And then we get like another 4 or 5 pages of Hildy discussing her findings. Or his Yo's findings, I can't remember if she was male or female at the time, with the central computer. And it's like, okay, so we had the story of her going to do the research, then we did learn about the research, then she discussed the research with the computer, the central computer. And there's so many other times in the book where, like, or at least when I'm reading that, I'm thinking, why don't you wrap up these thematic explorations into 2 paragraphs and then illustrate them with a character, or something a character does, or a plot does, rather than expounding on it at length. And actually, he does do this in quite a few of the subplots, or the sub-incidents, and the sub-stuff happening, kind of stuff going on. Like, a few people do commit suicide. Again, I'm not going to give it away, but it's a little bit obvious what's going to happen. And look, they're in the book. And it's like, why didn't you talk about those suicide themes? And he does, in a way. But sometimes the subplots and the sub-characters and the sub-happenings would have been a much better place to suddenly talk about the 5 or 6 reasons, or, you know, he could have hinted at them, and only at the end of the book, and it could have come out just in the conversation with him, rather than as an essay, and then a conversation, and then a character illustration, and then a stuff happening kind of thing. But I like thematically strong books, but this time, sometimes you just go, okay, like, thanks for the lecture, thanks for the workshop, but let's just move on a bit quick. And also, as I said before, the suicide theme really does tie up a bit, and I don't really want to give away the conclusion to the book, but it's so sort of like blatant and so kind of like in your face and so kind of, really? That's the conclusion? Here's the idea. Okay, you commit suicide, life is pointless, except if you're a libertarian. Woo! Libertarianism for the non-suicide win. And it's like the only people who are free and happy and striving have got, you know, it's only if you're striving towards something, which is when you feel like you've got something. Everything else is like a little bit pointless, and everything else is, you know, even your family might not be worth living for and stuff like that. But if you're striving to get rich through personally controlled enterprise in an unbounded kind of system which isn't being controlled by the CC, that's the only way to really live. And there's no suicides around here. And I'm like, okay, what was the message here? And it actually says at one point, it's like the only time you're free is when you're really free to live your life is when you're free to fail. And it's just, but the thing is, in that situation, failing is like you get ill, or you fall below a poverty line and starve, or you just die because of an accident or something like that, because that kind of uncontrolled society is really, and I'm like, okay, so that's the way to avoid suicidal tendencies, is it? Not really so sure, but it's a good job. This is a good job that Hildy is such an awesome journalist, because, you know, it's like, how else? Unless you're, like, awesome at something, the only way... No, it's just really weird. It's just a really weird kind of thing. Because on one side, you've got this whole long life. You're going to live 300 years. No problem at all. Like, people living 300 years, long life. Almost practical immortality. But then the way that you're going to end is with suicide. Or you can have this short, harsh life where, you know, it's sort of like every man for himself, dog eat dog kind of thing, you know. And you're probably going to die by, like, a painful, accidental death. But at least you're not going to commit suicide. And I'm just thinking, well, is that really worth it? Would you... Which kind of lifestyle? And I'm not really sure which way, you know, the conclusion is going in the book, but it feels like that's a conclusion. And as a main theme, and if that is the answer, but the thing is, the answer is so open at the end, and the plot is sort of open. There's lots of, even it says at the beginning, I'm not going to wrap up any of the ends, and then at the end of the book, it's like, yeah, I told you I wasn't going to wrap up all of the ends. So, like you say, this meandering plot, maybe it doesn't take you to that conclusion, maybe there's another conclusion, but then, like, the other tragedies that happen at the end of the book makes me think that is actually what it is. going on, but then I'm not sure. So it's a bit strange. But the themes are strong, even though sometimes they're a bit overbearing and sometimes they're a bit preachy. Other times they're subtle and leave you with questions that you can answer in your own mind. So that's really good. So what we have here, as a conclusion, I'll wrap the book up now. It's a slow read. For me, it was a slow read. I guess other people could probably get into it. There's loads of great ideas, loads of great technologies, creative elements galore, interesting characters, you know, interesting events. No plot's a bit shit, but all these other elements are very strong. But the lack of plot really does bring it down quite a long way. And it made it. And I was, like I said before, it was a struggle to read through this book. It took me a long time because I was reading a few pages and reading a few pages. And then I get to somewhere and there's something had happened. I'd be like, yes, great. And I turn the page and I realize that what we're getting into is another 3 or 4 page description of another part of the lunar colony. And I'm just like, great. Or another 2-page description of some more technology. And at the beginning of the book, I don't really mind that happening, but like when you get 100 pages in and you expect to actually go, okay, right, I've got the world, I understand the world I'm in now, let's get moving on, but it never really picked up at all. So it could, in this book somewhere, is like a 4, 4.5 star novel, easy, except, you know, like you say, the ideas and then the characters and the themes, concept, all really, really strong. And the writing style is great too. But you need an editor to say, look, the ending, let's get an ending, let's move the plot forward a bit quick, and let's cut out 150 pages of this book. This would be like a perfect book. This would be like a 4.5 star book, easily. Not perfect, but you know, really good stuff going on there. But it isn't that. So I'm gonna only give it, you know, I want to give it 3.5 stars, but then it's like for a book that I really struggled to finish. But then yesterday, because I read from about halfway through to the end yesterday, while I was waiting in Madrid airport for 5 hours, and once I actually got down to it and I didn't have all the distractions and my computer wasn't on and I didn't have internet access and I wasn't playing natural selection on the PC and I couldn't juggle and all these other things that I normally do and I didn't feel like writing, I actually sat down and read it. I read it and thoroughly enjoyed it and finished it off this morning, like the last 5 or 6 pages I finished this morning. So yeah, I'm going to give it 3.5 stars because it is worth it. It is very flawed, but you probably work it out. And I'll move on now. That, by the way, this is based purely entirely on how much I enjoyed reading the book. I think it is actually a better book than I enjoyed it. I think other people would get more out of it, so check it out. Like I say, I forgot this feature last time, I think, but here we go. Recommended related books. If you liked this, or even if you didn't like this, here's some similar ideas of things to read. So I made a note of these. Politically, read something by Heinlein or any of his books set on the moon and check those out. Technology-wise, it's got a lot of cyberpunk references in here, and maybe that's actually, I've noticed this as well with cyberpunk books and other books with the word punk in them, like steampunk, you know, like Perdido Street Station. You've got like this meandering, not focused on the plot, more focused on like the ideas and themes and characters, or it's sort of like a little bit more rambling, as though like, no, we're punks, we don't care about normal storytelling, we're gonna take off in different directions and things like that from normal books. So yeah, maybe check out some cyberpunk. Definitely check out, if you want meandering world building with like lots of elements which are introduced and then just ignored later on, with Deus Ex Machina kind of events at the end and on the way through as well. Read Perdido Street Station by China Mieville. That's similar in many ways. If you want a book about suicide, I'm not really quite sure about that. I know I definitely read plenty of science fiction books about suicide, but I can't think of any right at the moment. I reviewed it. Gateway by Frederick Pohl. Not specifically about suicide, but there is psychotherapy done by a robot, and in this book there's a lot of psychotherapy done by the central computer. So there's, even though the setting is completely different, I do think there's quite a few parallels that you could draw between Gateway and Steel Beach. Oh, and a word on the title. No, I'm not going to give away the title. It's quite a good title. There are some, the main thing is, actually I will just explain it because it's quite good. The idea is that they talk a bit about a fish evolving and getting out of water. And that they the only way that a fish will, the fish evolved to be in water is when it gets washed up on a beach and was like, I can't move, I've got to get back to the water. So it flopped around and got back into the water again. And then the next time the fish got swept onto the water, it might have had the genes of one of the, well, actually doesn't explain it. It actually explains it really badly. It just says, the next time he got swept onto the beach, he was better at it and could flop around in a more directed way. And so another character goes, that's not how evolution works. And they're like, no, shut up, it's an analogy, which is quite good. Oh, I just remembered what I wanted to say about before, about the storytelling. And then they said, so that's the fish flopping around on a beach, and about how human evolution is sort of stagnating a bit. And that's what the steel beach is. That's what this book is. It's the moon is the steel beach that humanity has been washed upon. It is now flopping around trying to find new direction. So that's where the name comes from. And I just remembered the way this great sort of storytelling device. It's Hildy is living out in one of these this commune, pretty much a commune in one of the Disneylands. Is like, yes, and I was building my house, and it was great, and it felt like me building my house, even though I could have just said to the central computer, hey, could you build me a house? But me building the house by myself is like a great is a metaphor. Is what it says. It's a metaphor of life. And me rebuilding my house, or me building my house, it's like the metaphor of me putting my life into order and giving myself direction. And then it says, oh, and then I had to dig this well, but just digging down through dry rock didn't feel very good. And it's just like, yeah, you just said this whole thing is a metaphor, but sometimes you don't like metaphors. And then it just finished off that chapter with like another massive blatant metaphor. And there's loads of stuff, like I say, lots of stuff in the book which is like another layer of meaning behind the blatant meaning, and then there's another layer, but then it's referenced directly, and then there's another layer underneath, which is really great as well. So yeah, those are my related things and some more notes. Wow, I've been going 54 minutes. This is the longest podcast in a long time, but this is a bit, like I say, a chunky book, a lot to talk about, a lot of good stuff in this book, a few not so good stuff in the book. Next read I'm going to read, I have it here on my iPod. Oh no, I actually bought myself an iPhone. That's a new bit of... technology of my own, which means I can Twitter and Facebook and email and stuff on the go wherever I am. Let me open up Stanza. I have here Post Singular by Rudy Rucker. Although I might read that, or I might pop up to the library on the ship and see if they've got some science fiction book, because I want to read A Brave New World. So maybe they'll have that here in the library, because they do. Sometimes they have classic science fiction on these books. So otherwise, yes, I'll read one of those few books, or maybe something completely different if I find some on a paperback exchange shelf. Otherwise, email me, luke@juggler.net. Keep sending in the book recommendations. Lots of people have been recommending stuff to me. The other way to recommend stuff to me and to see what other people have recommended is go to goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. Which is the best way to keep up with where I am and what I'm reading and stuff like that. It's a really great site. I'm following lots of other people, and lots of people can recommend me stuff and follow me that way. That's the best way to keep up with the books. I used to use the SFBRP wiki, but I'm winding that down and moving my future reading and book recommendations over to goodreads.com. So sign up. It's free. It's a great service. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurge on Twitter. You can get all details, not just of books I'm reading and when I'm releasing podcasts and stuff, but all of my other little updates of what I do otherwise. Otherwise, follow my blog, which has everything on my blog. Videos, photos, travel news, juggling news, life news. I'm putting up pictures and photos, lots of different stuff on there. So check out lukeburge.com/blog. Otherwise, check out my own novel, plug, Mining Tomorrow. The sequel to Mining Tomorrow will probably be out by the end of the year, hopefully out by the end of the year, and maybe before then I'll get out my intermediate novel, more of a novella, kind of set in another world, called Monster Story. So far it's called Monster Story. I still need a better title for that, so anyone who read that, send in a better title. Actually, if anyone can think of a good title of a book featuring sort of like dinosaur-like monsters set on a planet, on another planet, email me name ideas, because I really like it. I really like some ideas. I need some better ideas. I've only had like 4 name ideas, and 2 of them are really, really shit, and the other one is all right. Anyway, 57 minutes now. I'll catch you next time. I hope you've enjoyed this. I'll see you next time.